Now it's Saturday, the 11th of May, and tonight there's going to be a great concert in the Nörgelwurf. Here with me on the wall around Göttingen is the Swedish singer, songwriter, musician Christian Kjellwander. Hello, Christian.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for joining me. We are going for a walk. It's very nice weather, sun, many people. Yeah, we will talk a bit about you and whatever you are doing. Tonight you're playing alone, as you said, just you and the guitar. You have a lot of songs that are produced with a bigger lineup.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to rearrange them? No. I'm waiting for the horn. How difficult is it to rearrange the material for your special groups and the occasions? Do you have fixed casts of people that you can switch between?
I mean, I have a few different people that I play with, some different drummers and a few keyboard players and bassists. But I usually do the albums with a core group of two or three other people, and then we do one tour, like a band tour, with that band, and then kind of every, because that's the amount of time that I can keep them, you know, in my leash. I can keep them in a leash for about 2 months after the record's released, and then I have to let them go, and they go off and do other stuff, and then that opens up the opportunity for me to play with other people and to, you know, find new musical experiences with newer musicians or new musicians. When I play, like on this tour, I'm playing solo. I don't have to really change the songs that much. I just normally just get on. I don't really rehearse them either. I just make sure that I can do everything with like the guitar, that I can like play the bass parts on the guitar more or less. Because it's like really, if you just play solos without having the bass stuff underneath, it sounds stupid. I just go look through that a little bit quickly, and then I just kind of go. I mean, normally they just kind of end up how they end up, and it's different every night. And I just kind of play and feel this, because the songs are written. I mean, they're written in one way, and then they're recorded in the moment, and you know, it's an always changing thing. So it's never not a very far stretch for me to just get on stage and do something. You know, it's what I've been doing my whole life, I feel.
So is there a usual way of getting into a new song, just the guitar or sound?
I mean, it can be anything that sparks a creative vibe or sparks a feeling or a sense of urgency or a reason that you feel like this needs to be said, this needs to be done. I can see this piece of art, or I can hear this piece of art in front of me. I mean, it can be anything from a walk like this to some major life-changing thing happening, or reading a book or watching a movie, whatever. Anything that sparks the will to create something, first off, and then when that thing is created, the ability and the forthfulness to finish it and to really work at it. And that's something that I've learned in the last 10 years or so, that it's all about work. I mean, if it's not good, then you have to work more, you know, keep working, because it's gonna be good in the end, you know. And that's changed, because when I was younger, I would just throw stuff away if I didn't like it. But now or as soon as I hit a wall, I would just stop, or I would record it, and then I would be not so pleased with it afterwards. But these days, or just put more stuff on until it was just literally you couldn't listen to it. But these days, I just there's always something there that, you know, there's some hook in the beginning that got me, that, you know, got me in the mouth, and I'm trying to. You work until you find that. What was it that made me write this song? Why did I even keep this idea? What is the reason? And if you find that, then normally, or usually after, you know, an amount of work, then things will pan out.
How do you manage to work on new material when you are on the road, on tour? You are driving on yourself, drinking, smoking. everything? Is there a place to think about new material, new songs to jam or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I try to do, when I do these kind of tours, the solo tours especially, I have a lot of time, especially driving, to think about new songs and to experience, or just to write lyrics and sing stuff. And I have a lot of, I mean, it depends on the weather. Now it's been really nice weather, so I've been out and about all over the towns in the mornings. But if it's the winter, then I just stay in the hotel and work on stuff normally. Yeah, I don't drink a lot and I don't smoke. I drive and I run and I try to listen to stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a special favor for cars? For some kind of cars? There are some cars mentioned in the songs, in the yeah. video of Forgernica.
Yeah.
There is a car and also in the Yacht in the Fog. So I came to the thought that maybe you have a fable for a kind of cars, perhaps.
I mean, I have a little guilty pleasure, or I mean, I enjoy the ingenuity and the quality of some cars, especially older cars. My father was a huge car fan. I guess I inherited some of that. I've had all kinds of cars. I've had old MGs and Land Rovers and Range Rovers and the old ones and Porsches and Land Cruisers and, you know, everything. For me, everything that I've like had this wanting to have, I've gotten somehow. And I mean, I enjoy getting behind the wheel of a nice old car and just driving, you know, back and forth to the supermarket. It's fine, you know.
There are some songs with reference to cities, countries, being on the road. Mm-hmm. Is that just a coincidence? I think not. Or is it being on the road an important issue for you, traveling?
I mean, I've actually been thinking about that on this tour a lot, that a lot of my artistry and a lot of my songwriting is in a sense built around the imagery that I'm experiencing when I'm on the road. And I've been trying to figure out what it is about, because it's not just running. It's something else about this, the adventure and the possibilities and the newness of things when you're on the road, just to see trees that you haven't seen before, just to see buildings. And it really makes you feel small as well in the world when you're traveling around, especially when you're traveling around in such a vulnerable state that it is to play your music and to you know, get up on stage in front of people and here I am, you know, welcome to my world, kind of. And I'm not really an exhibitionist kind of person, so for me it's a big deal. I mean, I'm used to it and it's what I do, but it's still a big deal. And I've thought about that, this whole why do I write so much about these, and I think it might be just that a lot of thoughts are provoked and awoke in me when I'm on the road. You know, there's a lot of things that I have the perspective, in a sense, of on my life when I'm away from it, in a way. But I'm also in the middle of it. So, like I said in the beginning, I've really thought a lot about it on this tour. Like, it's strange how much I need this. You know, I need to be in Göttingen today and to see the sun and to see the leaves and to, you know, I mean, this looks like a Renaissance painting here. You know, it's absolutely beautiful to me. And I noticed that I needed it during the pandemic because there was no touring. And all of a sudden the wheel kind of stopped, you know. There was this like natural motion of going on tour, gathering ideas, writing, you know. And I've always, I think also when I started, if I really push myself to like, why do you do this? And why did you start doing this? I think there might, one of the main reasons was I wanted to travel. I wanted to see the world through music. That was like really a big thing for me to be able to not just pay my way to go to places, you know, actually go there and work in these strange parts of the world. It's interesting.
So you described the trees and the leaves in the sunlight as a Renaissance painting. There are also often natural aspects in your lyrics.
Yeah.
Mountains, the sea, a lot of sea, water, a wave on the new album, or a whale. What does nature mean to you?
I mean, nature is where we're from. It's all encompassing, and it's always been. I was in the museum today in Leipzig at the art museum, and I was walking around, and there was the modern exhibition, and then there was the Renaissance exhibition, and then there was the other more local, like Leipziger artists, like was his name Klinger, Max Klinger, I think. And I was walking around, and I was looking at, especially at the Renaissance paintings and all the natural motifs, and just thinking that this is, I mean, they were just trying to capture the most wonderful thing there is, which is humans, naked humans, and nature. That's what it's about. Now we're so blasé on that that we need, you know, all this pop art, in a sense. That was my thought this morning. I was like, why this contemporary art? It's I mean, of course I love contemporary art as well, but there's something about this, the love of the natural. I just and the technique, and I mean this amazing portraits of these people that are dead and gone, and just it's just a picture. It's an old selfie, but it's still, the technique is, you know, took months to make, and there's just something about that. I can't explain it, but nature is, it's everywhere, and it's a huge part of my life. Yeah.
That reminds me of the album title, A Village, Natural Light.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
As you talk, you are in the museum today. Mm-hmm. There is one album of you, Exitus, which stands a bit out from the others because it is more experimental. Mm-hmm. You were inspired by a Swedish photographer, which I didn't know until then, Jakob Fellender.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about Jakob Fellender?
I mean, he's an old friend of mine. We've known each other for probably 20 years, and he's always been a good photographer, and he's been doing these art projects. And he did one about 20 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago in Big Sur, that I really liked. And I had one of his pieces at my house for a few years. And then he asked me if I wanted to do music for an exhibition he was going to have in Berlin. I don't remember the name of the art hall, but it was quite a big exhibition with like a bunch of modern... his paintings kind of come alive nowadays. There's like these... They come at you. They're like 3D paintings almost. He wanted me to play there live and to accompany these photos and these paintings. So we had that all planned, and then the pandemic hit, and there wasn't going to be a concert or an exhibition. Mm-hmm. So I had this loose material. I just written some ideas. Nothing was written really, and we were going to improvise around it. Was the improvise around the photography and around the pictures, and while it was moving and while it was, you know, so I just asked him for a lot of the photos, and I had all the photos, and then I went to my house in the south of Sweden for a weekend, and I wrote some more stuff, and then we recorded it the day when I got home, just in one day, and just me and Pat and Don Berglund on bass. So it's all recorded just live in one first takes of everything. And and it was just fun for me to do something away from lyrical based and away from the voice. So it was mostly just about the guitar and being in it musically, which I enjoyed a lot.
I managed to watch some photographies on the internet. Mm-hmm. Big Sur was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I had the thought... It looks like that the motifs had a kind of delay, like a time delay or a sound delay, a sound repetition. Mm-hmm. But the repetition is not a repetition, but it is it's changed. And there are some,
morphed a little bit.
It overlaps with the previous and the following.
Yeah.
And I thought, yes, maybe there is some of the Kjellwander's sound in these pictures too.
Maybe.
Is it a bit nerdy to think? I mean, or
yes, it's a bit nerdy, yeah. But I like the concept of them, of abstract thinking in that way. I mean, I think you can looking for these strings around how things are connected and where there's meaning and where the strings are tight, and you know that you can hear something if you touch these strings, and these strings are really loose but they're there, and you can tighten them at times, and it's all very interesting. It's an interesting web. Art in general is just basically what I'm trying to say. But so yeah, don't worry about being too nerdy. No, it's fine.
The first song I heard from you was For Guernica, the first single of the album Wild Humans. Yeah. I was immediately caught by the mood of the song. It's very slow, deep, moving, at the same time sad, but also comforting. Is this an emotional opposite pair in which you move in your music and lyrics?
I think that all that kind of stuff just happens. It's not something that you really... It's this mix of being... I mean, for me, being just the human that I am, I'm sad, I'm kind, I'm an asshole, I'm hard, I'm warm, I'm cold. I mean, I can be all kinds of people in different situations. And that's kind of the same thing with the art, that it changes, and you just know when you're at a juxtaposition or when you're at an axe, and somehow, and maybe that axe is, like you said, between the comforting and the sadness, or the harshness or and the lovingness, or there's like an axe point, and that's kind of where I want to be, both lyrically and musically. You're looking for that spot where two worlds kind of collide, and where you haven't really heard anybody else be, in that you're looking for something new. And I find that the newness nowadays is often on the outskirts of the already made, or something like that. It's hard to explain, but it's that's what I'm looking for. Is the tension? Is maybe I'm just looking for tension. I think what that tension is between, I don't really know. Every time, I mean, it's the songs they, you know, they find you and you find them, and then you're looking for the tension, I would say. I mean, if you take a song like For Guernica, it also has the line, I'll take care of you, which is comforting. Yeah.
I find this tension, for example, in the lyrics of Notes from the Drive Between Cement and Alcohol, and it is this opposite or combination of loneliness and wide openness.
Yeah.
Which is
brilliant?
That is brilliant, of course. It's kind of feeling I have when I'm on the shore, on the North Sea, on the beach.
I wrote that when I was in Spain, and I was traveling across the mountains between more like Valencia and Alcoy, and it's just like there's something in the loneliness of wide openness also in your head, because if you're wide open, that's what I mean. I'm always trying to be wide open in my head. But when I am, there's also a loneliness in that, because you're really looking for something. And on that trip, I was writing the new album, which was the idea. I'd gone to Spain for 3 weeks by myself to start writing the album, and then my family was going to join me in Madrid. And the first few days, I was like, wow. What is this? Because I was opening up. I was like getting ready to start writing, and that's always an interesting period, because you have to be really, really open and vulnerable, and it's really lonely to be that, in a sense. That's kind of what it's about.
We're still on the wall around Göttingen, and I like this this special sunlight.
Yeah,
we have at our home, we have a balcony, and there is an tree, don't know the English word, it's Ahorn in German. In this light you can see the insects flying around, and that's very beautiful.
Very.
And then I think, yeah, there are many insects, so we can have many birds in the park. In the year 2023, you had also a release with the Swedish band Tonbruket, which means in English, I think, something like Factory of Tone.
Exactly, yeah.
My wife helped me. She okay. is a bit firm of Swedish, and I asked her, "Do you know what that means? Let's try and search." And then we came to it. The combined band name is Kjellvandet Tonbroket. And the initial idea was, as I read, to record with musicians you didn't know at all. So the band was new to you?
Yes, more or less. I mean, I knew them a little bit, but I'd never played with them. Mm-hmm. Never really played, no.
And why did you choose this band, Tonbroket, for this experiment?
It's a long story, because a friend of mine called Åke Linton, he was the sound technician for Esbjörn Svensson Trio, which is a Swedish jazz mm-hmm. trio, and Esbjörn died in 2010 maybe, or 11. And after that, his band disbanded, and Don started Tonbroket. And Åke went and started doing Tonbroket recordings and Tonbroket live gigs. And then Åke quit touring. So Tonbroket went on, and then when Åke was at my house recording another band, and he said, "Oh, I would love to record Tonbroket in this room." I used to live in a church. I had a really beautiful room that had really great sound. And so Åke said, "I would love to record Tonbroket here." And then we had this idea that Tonbroket was going to come there and record. And then it never happened. So, and then I met Martin, who plays keyboards in Tonbroket, and we said we should do a record together. And then I continued with the concept of just writing 4 or 5 really simple songs where I didn't have, there was no complicated chord structures and stuff. Just, it was easy enough to just improvise around. So I invited them to the house and we set everything up, and then we did the whole record in 24 hours and just first takes on almost everything. Yeah.
Sounds like a good concept, I think.
It was actually,
the album is good as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a really lucky time for me to make that record, because it was a turbulent time in my personal life, and I just really wanted to make that record before the house was sold, and just got lucky. I mean, the songs were good and the band played great, and it went so quickly, and it was so schmerzfrei. It was like there was no artistic agony at all. It was just, we do this, and that was also the idea, that was the concept we had. We said, whatever happens in these, we had 2 days booked, whatever happens in these 2 days is going to come out no matter what we do, so we better just make it good, you know. And that, it worked.
Somewhere I read that you had some ideas for the first album sessions with Tonbroket. Lyrics, music and stories.
Yeah.
So explicit was the word story. And there are songs like on this album, which is Doom Country, like Normal Behavior in a Cutting Garden and Yacht in the Fog, on which you don't sing, but it's more like a spoken word.
Yeah.
The lyrics seem to be longer stories, dreams, structures, impressions.
Definitely.
Are these stories a form of in which you approach your lyrics more often?
I mean, there's different. I mean, I write differently. I try to write every day something, however short or long. And sometimes it can just be a story that comes, and sometimes it's just a poem. Sometimes it's just one line. Sometimes it's just a conceptual idea that I just thought down. I just write. But both the Yacht in the Fog lyric, it just came to me one afternoon. I think I was in the car and I just wrote that lyric down, and then I put it away and I didn't look at it for probably 2 years, and then I was looking through some archives and I saw it and I thought this will be good for the Tonbroket record. And then Normal Behavior was a longer story that I'd been writing, and I had a lot of lyrics for it, and I probably should have condensed it even more. Now that I listen back to it, it's really long, but I like the idea as well, that it's just this crazy trip. Yeah.
Did you ever thought of editing or releasing your lyrics in the print way?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely thought about putting out books of poetry or short stories and stuff. Yeah, for sure. But we'll see. I'm not really pleased enough with anything yet.
That's funny. You wrote the lyrics for Yacht in the Fog in the car, and the lyrics also deal with the car.
Yeah.
And Burt Reynolds is mentioned, I think.
It's actually a true story, because that's my... I don't remember if it's the same day that my dad picked me up in the Pinto, but There was a boat called Big Flow that was for sale. My dad was a boat dealer when I was a kid. And there was a boat that he wanted to buy for us as a family. And it was an old steel yacht, like a 52-foot yacht that used to belong to Burt Reynolds and Lonnie Anderson. And it was a really beautiful boat. But we never took it. I don't think we took it out. The fog part is from another trip when I was in the boat. But that's also true. We actually ended up in the middle of the Strait of Juan de Fuca in total fog, like really thick fog. And, you know, you have to do the horn if you're in the fog. And we heard all these horns, you know, bellowing around us. And we're in the really literally in the middle of the ocean. And it's just, you can't see anything. And it's such a, I just like that metaphor of being on this, like the nicest, the most expensive thing you can get is like a yacht, you know, like a, you know, and you're, it's supposed to be this protected world, but if you're out in the middle of the fog, it doesn't mean anything, you know, it's, and that's what's, it's an interesting, a yacht in the fog, it's just, it's a nice picture, I like it.
So the other boats have horns, but if they come too close and the boats are too big, you have no chance of getting out.
No, you have to just listen. People, I mean, nowadays I'm sure there's like satellites and GPSs and stuff, but back then there was just horns.
Do you use a navigation system when you're driving?
Yes, luckily. I save a lot of gas doing that. Or do you want me to just answer that no?
No.
I navigate like the birds. I just find the stages. I just follow.
Hey, that's okay.
No, I'm kidding.
I use one as well sometimes. I don't get along with it. It's too complicated.
Yeah.
And I am my trips are not so complicated as yours.
No. I travel 60,000 kilometers every year, and if I didn't use one, it would probably be 70,000. Yeah. So I'm glad I have one.
You've come a long way from a classical singer-songwriter towards more longer pieces. Mm-hmm. And I said pieces, not songs.
Yeah.
Of music. Some are almost meditative, mm-hmm. in a way, even when they are rock songs.
Yeah.
Some don't have a classical song structure at all. We talked about Exitus. Mm-hmm. Can you describe your evolutionary path over the time?
I mean, I can't really describe it. I've just kind of followed my feelings, my gut. I've never really felt as a singer-songwriter. I've never really just sat on stage with an acoustic guitar. I mean, I would like to. One day maybe I will, just because that would be the most interesting thing I could do. But I've always just felt like an artist, like, you know, somebody who wants to do something and make something and evoke and provoke and you know, give people art to listen to and to fill 45 minutes of their day or their evening, like something you can step into for a while. And that's always been my motive, more so than songs or like hits or, you know, anything like that. Just kind of, I've always really thought about the records more than the songs. I think I want the records to be pieces of art.
Yeah. Now we have a short interruption in the wall,
mm-hmm.
and we are now in, this place is called Groner Tor.
Okay.
Grone is a part,
uh-huh.
okay. of Göttingen now, and in the Middle Ages it was a separate town, village. Mm-hmm. And this was here was the gate.
Okay.
Tor means gate.
Okay.
Now it's not as beautiful as in the Middle Age, but they're working on it. Yeah, it's a kind of challenge to get through this, what's the name for that? Baustelle, working ground.
Okay, by car.
As well, if you're walking,
okay.
and we have to go here, you can, on one side you can go straight through, on the other side you have to interrupt and cross and go back and cross, and you have to check to where do you want. We can now, have to think about, can now to the, you wanted to see the old Rathaus.
Okay.
We can go ahead, yeah. It's interesting to take a look inside a day in the life of rock musician on tour.
Yeah.
If they are bigger bigger bands like the Stadion acts. They have world tours, and I imagine a photography of Pink Floyd in the in the 80s watching the Red Place in in Moscow, and it seems to be like a big family holiday trip. Mm-hmm. But if you are working alone as you do it now, it's a little bit harder to fill the days. Or
it's not hard to fill the days. I have a pretty good regimen, or like a day's work. I get up and I go for a run usually, and then I have breakfast, and then I just, and either if I have a short drive, I'll do something in the city that where I'm in, go to a museum or go to the park or go buy something. I'm always looking for something to buy or just go for a walk or just stay at the hotel and read or play some guitar. And then I get in usually at around 4, and then there's sound check and there's dinner, and then maybe I'll take a little nap because I'm often very tired. That's what you're usually chasing, is just sleep when you're on tour. And then play, sell some records hopefully, and then pack everything up and drive back to the hotel and wind down for about half an hour, and then fall asleep and the day starts over. And that's how it, I mean, that's what it looks like when I do the solo tours. But solo tours are different than the band tours, because the band tours we're there's a lot of people and there's more stuff happening, and the evenings are usually a little bit later, and more people, and there's more social. It's more like what you described as the family life kind of. Yeah. But doing the solo thing, it's really interesting, because this is a beautiful wall, by the way. I have to take a picture of this. It's really interesting to do the solo stuff, because it's like a meeting like this would not happen really, I don't think, if I was with the band, because it would be too stressy, you know. I couldn't just leave the band for an hour and go for a walk.
This is it's called Marienkirche, Mary Church.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Don't know which confession it is. Not Catholic.
No.
But don't know the English words for Protestants. Yeah. And we have here from Martin Luther, Lutherana.
Yeah. I
don't know.
Marburg, right?
I'm not a professional town guide.
No.
Yeah, Göttingen has a much of this, the German word is Fachwerk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful, really nice.
This is the next church, Johanneskirche,
right.
which was on the 10 euro note.
Ah, okay. Is or was?
Do you have one?
Yeah, I think so.
Or was it D-mark? Oh, that's embarrassing, don't know. And that is the old Rathaus you see here, right through. Tomorrow morning, on Saturdays, there is a group of brass playing people. Every Saturday they play some pieces,
yeah.
And you can hear it around.
Okay.
That's very nice. And years ago, maybe a decade or longer, mm-hmm. on the top there was a small flat for students. If you had a guided tour up, you have to put a canister of water and
students.
For the students,
when
exactly.
This must have been a long time ago.
Oh, 20 years ago.
Only 20 years ago.
I don't know. They made some repairing since then. The flat is not.
No.
There is 1200, yeah. So do you have a special kind of favorite era?
I mean, I love so many different things from different eras. I mean, like Bombay, which is almost like medieval. I love that in one sense. And then, I mean, today I was at an exhibition of Jugend glass. That's amazing. I mean, there's some pockets, and sometimes when there's just total, you know, alignment, like we're talking about the axis, when everything just meets. I mean, the French Jugend glass thing is just amazingly beautiful. There's so many beautiful things being made then. And the same thing with the Renaissance paintings and the, you know, the Gothic churches, or, and, you know, I mean, American architecture, mid-century or 19th, right on the 19th century, is beautiful as well, I think. Yeah.
This is the town book hall, okay. The open library. Yeah. Library is the word.
Okay. It's a quaint town. I like it. It's nice. I had no idea what to expect. I've only been never been in Göttingen, but I've been at the Rasthof in Göttingen, the big one that's on the motorway.
Yeah. From the way to or from Kassel.
Yeah, probably. Yes, exactly.
I missed the date in Kassel because it was around Easter.
Yeah.
And
I didn't miss much. It was terrible.
Oh. Why?
Yeah, it was just a bad place. Yeah, not a very good venue. And the promoter was, he might listen to this. He was just not the best promoter. No.
We are glad that you are here, not in Malmö on the European Song Contest.
Me too. Me too. I'm happy I'm not there.
Here's and that is the old Rathaus you see here, right through. Yeah, you can. There are art. Can visit art, different kinds of art, and you can marry.
Okay, you can get married in this place.
Of course. They have some other nice places to marry, to get married.
Very nice. It's really cool. Historische Rathaus. Unfortunately, there's so much ugly shit here. It's too bad. But
we forgot the song Strangers in Northeim, but it doesn't have to do anything with this Northeim.
It actually does. The song. I was in Northeim playing, I think, here. I think it's this Northeim. If there's a record company in this Northeim, is there? I think there was a record company called Stockfish, which is like a really famous record company, and they wanted to do a live record with me, and so I went and I played in Northeim, a great concert, really nice people, everything was great, and I said to them, I said, I'm going to call the record Strangers in Northeim, because I had this period when I was touring. I looked up famous people from Northeim, famous people from the towns where I came to, and I would, in between the songs, I would talk about these famous people. And in Northeim, I accidentally mentioned some kind of a Nazi person that was from Northeim, and they didn't like that I said that, of course. And then I said, well, I can just call it, can I call the record Famous People from Northeim? And they said, no. Okay, can I call it Strangers from Northeim? No. They wouldn't allow me to call it anything from Northeim. So when I was working on The Wild Humans, which is written after the immigration, the spring, the Arabian spring, and when all the immigrants came to Sweden, we were pretty involved in that and taking care of a lot of people and trying to help them to get into society and just do, you know, paperwork and stuff like that. And a lot of that really resonated in me, and I was writing from that kind of perspective of being, leaving everything behind and coming to a new town. And when I wrote that song, I had the town of Northeim in mind, because I was walking around that town and I remembered walking around, and then I also remembered my joke about the strangers in Northeim, and that I wanted to call that record Strangers in Northeim. So that's how that title came about. So it's about the real Northeim, but it's about this feeling of coming to a new country, and especially, I mean, the Northeim that I met there was quite conservative. I don't know if it's the same one that we're talking about here, but and I just felt that, oh geez, if I were to come, you know, from another country now and land here and with just, and I had left my kids and I was here with my wife and we don't even know where our kids are. Maybe they're in you know, in the country next, in Yugoslavia or in, you know. Yeah, that was just kind of the thought of that song. Yeah, so, no, long story.
Do we have time for a song in the studio?
It might be a little too much.
Okay.
Might be a little too much for me. I need to eat something small.
Yeah.
And then I have a show in an hour and I need to just rest for a few moments.
Yeah. After a short walk around Göttingen, now we can leave you some rest. Thank you. For this interview.
Thank you for the tour. I think you should become a tour guide. Yeah.
I have to learn a bit more, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But it would be an interesting part of the interview, you know. Yeah. If you knew a lot and then you could just there this is and you could tie that into the artists, find connections between Göttingen and
oh, okay. Yeah.